Great. Welcome everyone to the Identity Implementers Working Group call for May 5th, 2022. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Shar Howland and I'm a co-moderator of this group with Heather Dahl. Today we will plan to cover working group status updates, and in the second half of the call, we will hear a presentation on the new Did Indie method from Daniel Bloom and Stephen Curran with time for questions at the end. And I'll work through the status update slightly more quickly than usual to make sure we have plenty of time for the presentation. We also probably do have fewer updates than usual because of IAW, but I'll ask in a few minutes if anyone on the call attended IAW and would like to share about their experience as well. As usual, this is a Hyperledger call, so we are following the antitrust policy and the Hyperledger code of conduct. We are collaborators in this space, and anything confidential or proprietary is not discussed in this call. And of course, as usual, let me know if you do have an interesting project able to be publicly shared that you'd like to talk about, and you're very encouraged to reach out and give a presentation. We'll just schedule you in for a future call. This call is being recorded and it will be posted on the meeting page later today. And with that, we can move on to introductions. Would anyone like to introduce yourself if you are new or rejoining, or just would like to say hi and a few words about what you're involved in this space? I'll also send out the wiki link again. If you're willing to put your name under attendees, that would be great. All right. Moving on to announcements. In 3 weeks, Indicio is hosting a meetup call that is very relevant to our presentation today. It is on the Did Indie method. This meetup will be longer than today's talk, so there will be an opportunity to go deeper and learn more. So if you are interested in what you learned today from Daniel and Stephen, you should definitely sign up for this meetup. The link is there to register. And then we've been announcing IAW for the past several weeks. It is now in the past. It happened last week and sounds like it was a great success. Did anybody who's on this call attend and would like to share a bit about their experience?
I had a lot of FOMO.
Yes, fear of missing out. Yep.
I can give like a quick overview of some of my experiences at IAW, if that would be helpful.
That'd be great. Thank you.
So I had the privilege of attending IAW. It was great to be back in person. Virtual IAW was great to have. And it was great to continue the momentum of the community even while we were unable to meet in person. But there's just something about meeting in person that is just really difficult to replicate in a virtual setting. I think it must be just the bandwidth at which we're able to communicate, and just the opportunity for the side conversations or the impromptu discussions just is greater than we had the opportunity for it in virtual IAW. That being said, some of the big things that stood out to me participating in IAW this year, there were some common themes that just kept on coming up. One of those being machine-readable governance frameworks, which is something that Indicio has had a lot of opportunity to participate in. So it was interesting to show up and have that be organically a topic that a lot of different organizations were talking about. I think as the community is maturing, we're all kind of reaching a point at more or less the same time where we're realizing that decentralized identity gives us a cryptographic foundation of trust, but doesn't communicate real world trust. It doesn't help us to identify that this DID is this organization that is a valid issuer of driver's licenses, passports, or whatever. And so as a community, we're all kind of hitting the same point of we need to be able to define what an ecosystem, what the participants in an ecosystem are, and what they're trusted for, and what roles they're expected to play. So that was a really common topic throughout IAW. And then we also, of course, had the common threads of interoperability, how we reconcile, quote unquote, competing standards in the verifiable credentials space. Kind of a highlight from a lot of those interop conversations is an acknowledgement from the community that we're not yet at a point where we feel it's appropriate to really rally behind one single implementation. We're at a stage in interop where there's still, we're learning what different solutions are appropriate for different use cases. There was an analogy to the browser interop days. I wasn't around for that, so I can't really communicate the analogy well enough to communicate the same meaning. So I'll just leave it there for now, I guess. But lots of conversations about that and how we can do better at interoperating. With one of kind of the cool things that came out of that is a plan to do a bit of dog fooding. And for next IAW, just have everybody come with their credential systems in tow and be able to use verifiable credentials at the door to present our ticket to IAW and kind of use that as an interop-a-thon, so to speak, on decentralized identity and verifiable credentials. That's probably enough waffle for me, so I'll leave it there. It was really good. Really glad to be able to participate and get back together in person.
Great. Thanks for sharing about your experiences and calling out those common themes. It sounds like it was a great success. Anybody else on the call attend who'd like to share about it? All right. Are there any other announcements that anybody would like to give? All right, we can move on to working group status updates with that. The main identity working group, we reported on their last meeting in our last meeting 2 weeks ago. So I'll leave those links up until we report on their next meeting, unless anybody's involved in that meeting would like to say a few words. All right, indie contributors. Stephen, since you're on the call, do you want to give a brief update on what we talked about in the indie contributors call last week?
Dude, gotta remember. Okay. Mirko did his presentation. I was hoping to see exact examples, and I was disappointed that we didn't have exact examples of what it would be like to put other objects in DID docs. And I'm still looking for that. So I've got more queries out into the community to see what that looks like. If you're referencing an object, a piece of data via a DID, what does that look like? And has anyone actually done that? So we're looking for that. We also talked about this proposal for DNS for a DID indie namespace. And while we thought it's a reasonable idea, it's still is just an alternative to the one we have. And we think it's not that strong an alternative or not that beneficial over the approach we're already taking. So I don't think there's a lot of further action going to happen with that. So that's where we are with, that's what we talked about on the Indie Contributors call.
Great, thank you for that update. Did Indie Method, just to reiterate that this call has been merged back into the Indie Contributors call, which has moved back to its regular time now that the work is done. And I've left off the demo, the links to the demos from previous calls, but I don't think we need to say too much more about this here because we will hear plenty about it in the second half. Let's see, the Aries working group meeting. Did anyone attend these latest calls who'd like to give an update?
Aries working group. We met yesterday, continues to, you know, lots of interesting things going on. The unqualified DID, we're looking at Timo has done an RFC or a proposal for an RFC on adoption of dealing with unqualified DIDs for how we will do that in the community coordinated update. And we do have some information provided on the problem of how you deal with present proof when you're willing to accept a bunch of different verifiable credentials, presentations from different verifiable credentials. That's the one in N problem. So more progress on all of those things. There was a whole bunch of topics and I can't cover all of them that we talked about on the Aries working group call, but it was very good. Sam, as Daniel did, an excellent recap of IIW. So there's a bunch of good things on that call.
Great.
I don't have further details onto what other than what you have written there, but I think there was a few more topics on the one yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And there are links here to those meeting notes for more information. So thank you. All right, Aries Bifold User Group. They didn't meet last week because of IAW, so we reported on their latest progress last time. So we can move on to ACAPI. Stephen, I'm calling you out a lot. Would you like to jump in again?
Sure. This one, we had good conversations on release 074 with people volunteering and being assigned. A few more things to verify, and then we'll get the release out. I think we're waiting for a bit of documentation now. I expect it will be out by the end of the week. So that's the final of release 074. We've had RC0 and RC1 release. Now this will be the final. Ian Costanza from BCGov gave a presentation on the Aries endorser service, and that is analogous to the Aries mediator service that we put out recently, which is basically a repo that wraps provides a configuration of Aries Cloud Agent Python, in this case, to do endorsing of transactions for indie ledgers. So this makes it much easier to deploy an indie ledger an Aries client, basically an agent that's perhaps an issuer or is an issuer and needs to have their transactions endorsed by a third party, whether it be an internal third party within the organization or an external third party. And so this will spin up an endorser service that accepts connections. We will extend that capability over time to include things like a user interface. So the endorser service might get a request from somebody they've never heard of. So that'll go to a human to look at and decide whether they want to allow that the endorser service to endorse the transactions for that new connection. So that's where we're going with that. So we had a presentation and there's a repo and a HackMD document sort of describes the direction and we're looking for input and contributions to that one. And that will eventually go into Hyperledger. Currently it's a BCGov repo.
Yeah, and I've linked the repo there. If you want to drop the HackMD document in the chat, you're welcome to, and I can add it in here.
You have a shot at that, yeah.
Great, thank you. All right, let's see, Aries Framework Go. They've been meeting, mainly going over work updates, but not too many notes from them. Let's see, Aries Framework JavaScript. Is anybody involved in this group who'd like to report? Looks like in the last couple of meetings, they've been mainly talking about supporting DIDCOM V2 in AFJ. I've linked a HackMD and Google Doc with more information on that. Then Hyperledger Ursa down here. Don't believe they've met since we last met. Are there Hyperledger working groups or status updates that I'm missing that anybody would like to call out?
One thing I wanted to call out that I realized I did the Aries quarterly report, and one of the things I wanted to report on was a comparison between the performance of Indie SDK as underlying, in this case, ACAPI agent, and Askar, the what is seen as the successor, and found there's pretty amazing difference between the two. So a contributor in the community in Germany, Paul Wenzel, and team, I think working with IBM, I think he works, I'm not sure where he is. I think he's with Lissy, worked with IBM to create a load test generator. So a whole environment where you can just define a load to run and run, you know, 100,000 issuances of credentials in an environment, and it collects statistics on it and displays it. And I've got a couple of links that I provided in the Aries quarterly report to the Hyperledger technical steering committee. And I just hadn't realized the scope of the difference. So basically what you see is that double the performance in using the latest Askar, the O25, which we just added to ACAPI. But more importantly, performance is consistent across the entire test, whereas with the Indie SDK, performance degrades over time. So basically the interactions get slower and slower versus Askar, which is absolutely constant across the entire test, and as I say, runs at twice the speed. So pretty impressive and very stark to see the two reports side by side. It's very impressive. So that is basically a way of saying the O25 version of Askar is out, Aries Askar, which is the storage component of Aries Agent that is alternative to using the SDK, the Indie SDK, and it's looking really good. And now we're certainly going to push more and more to putting our implementations on top of that. Certainly all our new implementations will go on top of that.
Thanks for calling that out. That does sound very impressive. And again, if you want to send out any of those links you mentioned, you're very welcome to if people want to learn more. So thank you for that update. All right. At the Trust Over IP Foundation, they had their all members meeting the day before our last meeting. Kyle reported on that meeting in our last session and was one of the presenters. Let's see, steering committee. As far as I can tell, they haven't met since our last meeting. Is anybody involved in the steering committee that would like to share about it? Or have additional information?
Yeah, sure. With Trust Over IP, oh, yeah, you have it listed. I see gain below that, but that was a topic of the steering committee, kind of as a result of, I guess, discussions at IIW, which I couldn't attend. But along with so gain and OIDC were both there and both interested in, in discussing further with Trust Over IP. I don't want to say ways of working together, but interaction points, let's say, something like that. And I think part of it was when Wenjing was presenting the Trust Over IP architecture stack that we've been working on that he's been spearheading. So so the steering committee was, one of the action items is to follow up with both GAIN and OpenID Connect and figure out how the architectures overlap and things like that.
Great, thank you for that update. Let's see, and in the communications committee, it looks like they're mainly talking about an SSI adoption blog. Dan, are you also involved in that? Would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, I'm definitely involved in the communications committee. The SSI adoption, it's not ringing a bell. Where's the line item here? Oh, sorry. It just has the link. There's so many things going on with SSI adoption. I know one of the things we're working on is, you know, comparing it with the MDL and things like that. I'm having a senior moment here. I don't remember exactly. There was a series of blogs. We were going to do an EIDAS comparison, an MDL comparison. So I'm not sure if this line item, SSI adoption blog, is an overarching for those for those more particular ones. But I know that those are in the works, EIDAS and MDL.
Great. Thank you for that update. It sounds like there's a lot going on. And then we already heard a bit about GAIN, which it sounds like the technology stack working group is working on as well. Let's see, Utility Foundry Group. Lynn, would you like to talk about what they're working on?
So we didn't have a meeting for the usual reason, I guess, IIW, this last time. And so there's nothing really new to say, but I'll remind everybody that we're working on a document that everyone's welcome to look at and review. The document is nearing completion, I think, and it's essentially most of the guts of the document are a rubric for determining whether a layer one public utility or an indie network, essentially, or whatever other kind of network you want to use is suitable for your purposes. So we're trying to help to set the stage for helping people to determine which network they should join, or whether, you know, in the end, if they don't want to join any of them, to build their own. So, and that building your own is not covered in the document, but it will be in the next phase. So that's where we're at.
Great. Thank you for that update. All right, Ecosystem Foundry Group. Let's see, in their last meeting, they had a presentation on CheckD from Tobias Halloran. For these last few TOIP groups, does anybody have any updates or anything they want to call out in general? All right, I'm looking at the time too. I might breeze a little bit more quickly through these last several working groups. On the DIF, DIGCOM working group, anybody attend this group who'd like to report? Looks like they, as many of our groups, have been reporting on IAW, going through PRs. Let's see, how about the Unsync DIDCOM users group meeting? All right, and then some of these I don't think have met since we last met. Sovereign Foundation, W3C standard. I think, yeah, a lot of groups have skipped a meeting because of IAW. But does anybody have any updates I'm missing on these last few groups in general, or any other status updates you'd like to jump in with?
So I don't have a ton of detail on this personally, but one of the sessions that was held at IAW was actually on a V2 of the W3C verifiable credentials data model, which is seeking to overcome some of the shortcomings that were discovered in the V1, particularly as it comes to just being too open, too permissive. So it was difficult to actually produce things that are interoperable. That was discussed. I believe Brent Zundel and others are working on putting together a charter to actually continue working on a V2 for the verifiable credentials data model.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for that update. All right, any last other working group updates or related matters? All right, thank you to everybody who jumped in with updates. It is very much appreciated. I think we are ready to move on to the presentation portion of the call. We will hear from Daniel Bloom, who is a lead software engineer and team lead at Indicio. He's a veteran of the community who started at the Sovereign Foundation in 2018 and joined Indicio from its founding in 2020. He's a regular contributor on the Aries and Indie projects and spearheaded the implementation of the IndieDid method that we're going to hear about in a moment. And Daniel also at one point led the Identity Implementers Working Group call. So it's great to have you back. And we'll also hear from Stephen Curran of Cloud Compass Computing. Stephen is also a veteran of open source software and facilitating working groups in this space, who dove full on into what has become the Trust Over IP Foundation in 2017. He works with the government of British Columbia and has helped define, build, and launch a variety of proof of concept and production applications built on verifiable credentials. He's also a regular contributor in the Indie and Aries communities, facilitating collaborations and driving interoperability. Also is the co-author of EDX courses on Hyperledger Indie, Aries, and Ursa, and is the current chair of the Sovereign Foundation. So with that, I will pass it over to you two.
All right, do you want me to start, Daniel?
Sure, do you have slides that you'd like to share? Or I can
share a couple of slides, but I'm gonna be really short because you've got the good stuff. So all I'm gonna do is put a bit of foundation on it to say, you know, what BC Gov was looking for when we put this out and what overall the Did Indie method is. So just to provide that background. So Did Indie method, key user stories is I wanna be able to receive credentials from issuers using different Indie networks and be able to construct a single and on-creds verifiable credential that uses all of those credentials. So that's a pretty straightforward thing. Issuers are going to be on different networks. I want to be able to use any of their credentials that they give me in a presentation that I give to a verifier. As well, a second one that we added into the Did Indie discussion was being able to publish a Did doc such that I can have other information in it than the core information on Indie, such as a BLS key, so that I can issue a W3C standard verifiable JSON LD credential using BBS plus signatures. Don't you love how long these user stories can get in when you talk cryptography and verifiable credentials? Just adding here, or anything else that goes in a standard DID doc. So, part of the issue was, so the core problems were Indie identifiers don't reference what Indie network you're actually dealing with. So you get an Indie identifier, an identifier for a DID or an identifier for a schema. And by looking at the identifier, you can't tell what ledger it's on. And so you get an awkward user interface like you see at the side here, where you have to, as a user, pick which network you think the issuer is using so that everything will work. LISSI developed a partial solution, which has been adopted by a number of stacks, which is they just check all of them. They just say, oh, we're going to deal with all of these networks. And when you send us an identifier, we'll just check all of them. Now, of course, that's slow and subject to collision, where you wind up with the same identifier on two networks, and you have to figure out what to do with that collision. But that's the core user experience problem we want to get rid of. And then as well, Indie does not have a native concept of DID docs. Indie predates the DID spec and therefore has conventions for generating a DID and a DID doc or a DID doc that is standard or meets the standard, but predates it. So here are the five goals and what we're going to talk about. Namespace DIDs are useful across all instances. So when you look at a DID, there's a component in there that says, oh, this is on the Indicio network. And you know to go there rather than trying a bunch of them and discovering that it's on in the Indicio network. So Indie network discovery and embedded in the DID itself is the namespace. Full DID doc support, we want to be able to provide allow a client to publish a DID doc that meets the specifications of the DID spec and can put as much or as little into that as they want. The names, coming back to the namespace piece, a non-cred uses a bunch of other objects beyond DIDs, not just DIDs, but schemas and credential defs and revocation registries. We want those also to be namespaced. And then there are several really important resolution parameters that are important for SSI. Things like version time, version ID, and resource. Basically, being able to look at history and say, yes, we know that DID exists, but what did it look like on June 12th, 2021? So you're able to, with those requirements, go back and see what the DID looked like at that time, not just the current version of it. And finally, we wanted to create a way to enforce or demonstrate that a DID is self-certifying. Self-certifying basically means there is a direct tie, a calculable tie between the DID and the public key for which it derived. So I create a key pair, a private key and a public key pair. I derive the DID from the public key, and then I publish that. And anyone can checking that can verify that the initial DID itself derives from that first public key that was used for it. And this is an important property to proving that you control the DID or that you're not just creating a DID for confusion purposes or things like that, that you actually created it from the beginning. Even after you rotate it, this property can be verified. This was an important capability that was somewhat in the original Indy implementation and definitely a core element of the carry protocol that's being used. So those were the goals. And with that, Daniel, now you did all the real stuff. And I should mention one more thing, sorry. BC Gov put out what's called a code with us, which is we said, hey, we need these things. Community, can you do this? And we put, and the government put a sum of money for it. And that's how this work came about. So huge kudos to BC Gov for creating a program that allows for open source challenges to be put forward. And basically the way it works is the government defines a goal that it wants. People or organizations apply, and in order to be paid, they need to do a merge that we agree meets the intent, the goal of that. And so it's a very low low overhead program, fantastic, and has really worked well in this space for BC Gov to get things done. In this case, Indicio and Dominic Werner won it, and Daniel will talk about what came from winning that. And Lynn's got a question.
Sorry, just an add-on. Maybe you mentioned this, but there's a place where the Genesis files are being stored for networks, and so the screen you showed where currently that you have to, you know, each app would have to contain whatever networks they trusted or listed or whatever, that is not going to have to happen in the future. If you get a new name, you can go look in a common place and grab the Genesis file and make it work is the goal there.
The discovery. So not only do you have the namespace, the ledger in the identifier itself, but there's a mechanism defined that the community agrees to say, oh, I can go look up this name, find the Genesis file and use it dynamically. So that's another feature that's been implemented. That was in the work, in the VDR work that Dominic did. And with that, go.
Cool. Yeah, thank you, Stephen, for kind of leading into it. That was a really good introduction to all of what we've been working on recently, I'd say. And thank you, Lynn, for the addendum there as well. So I'm going to talk about the Indie Did method, getting a little deeper than Stephen did. And yeah, I think I'll just go ahead and hop right into it. So a lot of this background, Stephen's already covered, so I won't spend too much time on it, but Indie was around before. We had NIMS and ATRIBS versus DIDs and DID documents, and there's been this dissonance between what Indie's doing and what the W3C DID core specification has been working on. And then we, of course, have the assumption that there would be only ever a single Indie network just didn't occur. And so being able to work with multiple Indie networks and issue from one network, verify from another, and use a variety of networks to accomplish our goals in decentralized identity is something that is both really valuable for interoperability, but just also allows us to use networks for what they're specialized to do, I guess. What framework or jurisdiction that they reside in, and kind of use that to help bring verifiable credentials and interoperable decentralized identity to a larger audience. So these are almost exactly the points that Stephen brought up as well. I'm going to dig into each of them one at a time here and talk about some of what we have done with the IndieDid method and in implementation. Man, get those words out to accomplish it. So first up, natively supporting DIDs and DID document semantics as defined by the W3C DID core specification. So we now explicitly have within the DID-Indie method rules for transforming the core NIM information into a base DID document. So inside of a NIM transaction, this is very much shortened just for brevity. We have multiple attributes inside of a NIM transaction, but the key ones for this purpose being the DEST or the method specific identifier value that you'd include inside of a fully qualified DID, and then the verkey, which is the public key currently associated with that NIM or that destination identifier here. So the DID-Indie method defines that these values, this DEST and verkey, becomes a DID document that looks like this. So we've got the ID of DID Indie and then the namespace of the network that we're resolving the DID from, and then that destination value, and then a verification method, a single verification method just included by default, associated with that destination with the fragment of verkey as the ID. This is an ED25519 verification key with a public key base 58 value corresponding to that original verkey value here. And then the controller as defined by the DID. And then also an authentication block which references that verification method. So this is the base DID document that can be constructed from all NIM transactions on an Indie network. We also have defined rules for merging in a new attribute associated with NIM transactions, the DID.content, that is merged with that base DID document. So as before, we've still got that DEST and verkey attributes inside of the NIM transaction, but we've also added this DID.content attribute, which contains a serialized JSON value, which might look something like this. So this particular DID.content is saying add on these JSON-LD contexts or, just the DID core context and then a DIDCOM messaging service endpoint context, and also include a service endpoint for DID communication, which has a recipient key pointing to the verkey that is contained in the core DID document and no routing keys in this endpoint and so on. So the rules as defined by the IndieDid method outline that the base DID document and that DID.content get merged into this value here. This is a little small. This is an image of an example taken directly from the IndieDid method specification. But if we inspect it here briefly, we should see all of those pieces that we saw in both the base and the DID.content merged together into a single value. So the ID, of course, the DID Indie namespace, and then that method-specific identifier, the verification method, which has that fragment of varkey and the base 58 encoded value for that key, that authentication that hasn't gone anywhere. And now we have also this service block, which includes that recipient key, service endpoint, and all those values that were defined inside of the did.doc content. And then of course, also the did.doc context that was included in the content. So this has a number of other really useful characteristics. It means that we can fully resolve the DID document from an ND network with just a single transaction, as opposed to doing a NIM followed by an ATRIB, which was the previous mechanism for resolving endpoint information associated with a DID on an ND network. We've more or less deprecated this usage of ATRIBs, but we are continuing to support the ability to look up the ATRIB transaction on ND networks. This is a fully backwards compatible change that has taken place. So using this did.doc content attribute, we can write any arbitrary did.doc value into an ND network DID. So like Stephen was mentioning, we can now include BLS keys. So we can include BBS plus signatures from ND-based DIDs. Also allows us to use other key types as well, not necessarily BLS, things that were previously not really things that we could add into an ND network. Okay, so next on the list of things was supporting those key resolution parameters. We've got version ID, version time, and resource. And as Stephen mentioned, these allow us to look up a value of a DID at some point in the past. So what did document values were associated with the DID on June 12th, 2021, or at a specific ID. So the didnd method specifies version ID as relating to a sequence number, which is a unique incrementing integer that is a reference to a transaction on an ND network. So version ID in the W3C did core specification gets mapped to a sequence number, which is included in a getNIM transaction. So under the covers, when we dereference or resolve this did ND sovereign ABC123 with version ID 789, the resolver is transforming this into a getNIM request with a sequence number of 789. In a very similar manner, if we have a version time, I've actually got a typo here. The version time is actually an ISO formatted date time. And then the resolver takes that value and then transforms it into a POSIX timestamp, which is what is natively supported by ND networks, and then does a similar getNIM transaction to the network to retrieve the DID document at that point in time. And then that resource parameter is mapped to a get transaction request on ND networks. So next on the list, we've got define did URLs to dereference non-CRUDS objects in a ledger agnostic way. This is of course only defined for the ND did method, but it leaves the door open for other did methods to resolve these sorts of objects in a similar manner, just by defining the semantics of dereferencing one of these did URLs. So this did URL looks something like this in a very abstract form. We have the did followed by a slash, followed by the object family, the object family version, the object type, and then an object type identifier. If you're familiar with the did.com space, this might look familiar, I guess. We followed a similar set of motivations to arrive at a namespaced and then versioned object that allows us to, you know, at some point down the line, define a different version or whatever for resolving a non-CRUDS object. So as an example of what these did URLs look like, previously when resolving a schema from an ND network, this is what the identifier would look like. This corresponds to the author of the schema. 2 represents that this is a schema. The NPDV is the schema name, and 4.3.4 is the schema version. Using the did URLs, we have did: ND: sovereign: the did, followed by slash, followed by a non-creds v0 schema, where schema is the object type, npdb, which is again the schema name, and 4.3.4 as the schema version. And we've also got a similar mapping that takes place for credential definitions or claim definitions and revocation registry definitions as well. Just again, same pattern of did author. This is, represents a claim def. This represents the signature type. CL is the only signature type currently supported by a non-cred, so this is actually omitted in this specific version to non-creds did URL reference here. The sequence number corresponds to the sequence number of the schema on the network, and then a tag for the credential definition. This is a good time to call out that in this v0 non-creds did URL reference format that we've established, we are looking forward to a time where we can reference schemas for a credential definition that resides on a ledger separate from the one where the credential definition is defined. So suppose we have a schema on sovereign mainnet for a driver's license schema. We could use that schema on an Indicio network to define a credential definition for my issuer, which is anchored to an Indicio network. We're not yet to that point. That kind of has some tie-in with the non-cred standardization efforts, which are occurring in parallel. But we've, again, by versioning these did URLs, we leave the door open for down the line saying in a V1, rather than doing a sequence number referencing a transaction on the same ledger, we can have another identifier which points to another network for that schema. Let's see. So at IAW, actually, as a brief tie-in, the semantics of did URLs were discussed briefly with Marcus Sabadello, who's been kind of the pioneer in the did resolution and URL dereferencing space. And it was really interesting having conversations with him about the did indie method and the example of using paths in did URLs as a mechanism to reference objects on a ledger associated with a DID that isn't a DID document. To my knowledge, I think we're the only did method that is currently doing this. But using Marcus's words here, just to brag a little bit, he said this was a very appropriate usage for the path of a did URL, even though it's not widely used yet. And he expects that this could be a very clean mechanism for referencing these sorts of objects on other did methods as well. So one day down the line, a did BTCR could reference non-creds objects written to that ledger using a similar path mechanism. And then it's just up to the dereferencer to use whatever mechanism specific to BTCR to resolve in a non-cred schema or credential definition. Cool. So then the final bit to talk about here, defining unambiguous network identifiers. Stephen covered this and Flynn did some covering of this as well. We want to be able to say which networks we're aware of and have the opportunity to dynamically discover new networks. So a particular client of indie networks can use a static definition where the client is just configured to quote unquote know about a set of indie networks. You might consider this as being part of a machine-readable governance framework, as an example, or it could just be built into an app directly where it just says, I know about Indicio, I know about Sovereign, I know about ID Union. And this would just be lumped in as a static definition of the networks that and namespaces that we're aware of. Then we can also do dynamic discovery of new networks. So the best example we've got of this right now is the Indie Did Networks GitHub repo, which is just a really lightweight way of essentially having a registry of these network namespaces and associated Genesis transactions so we can interact with those networks. Um, Yeah, I don't think I have too much more to say on that. So we don't necessarily see indie networks being as frequent as hundreds or thousands. So having a lightweight mechanism such as this GitHub repo to discover new networks for the 100 or so that we anticipate is at the moment a favorable solution for this dynamic discovery. So to briefly talk about what's been going on the DID method work. So as Stephen mentioned, we did the BCGov code with us, Indicio and Dominic Werner were awarded the code with us. And we at Indicio worked on the indie node side of things, so the network side, to add support for the indie DID method. And Dominic worked on the indie VDR or the resolver side to support indie DID method and providing that kind of generic resolver interface. Don't have enough time to really get into exactly what those changes looked like, so I've just got a brief overview here. There were additions to the NIM transactions, as I've previously described. We added that DID doc content. We added a version, which ties into the self-certification feature that Stephen described as well. We added the ability to do that sequence number and timestamp resolution for GitNIM, as well as get a trib for that legacy support. On the NDVDR side, those additional optional parameters for the doc content version, sequence number, and such were added to the requests and builders for those requests. The resolver interfaces, so taking a DID indie DID and turning that into a DID document, that all took place inside of the indie VDR, as well as updating the proxy service that's in the indie VDR repo, which provides a web service that can be used to resolve these DIDs, and then updates to the Python wrapper. So that was a very high level overview of the indie DID method, the current work that's been going on. So what comes next? First, we'll need a release of indie node and indie VDR that includes all these changes that we've made. And then after we have a release, ledgers will need to be updated to run this new software. And then after that, we need agents as well to be updated to support these unambiguous identifiers within AnonCreds objects. So we anticipate that work will take place inside of it, the IndieCredX libraries and other shared libraries to add that support to agents at a lower layer so everybody can benefit from it. Specific agent implementations can also work directly with whatever libraries they choose to add support for that. At this time, we currently don't have scheduled any changes for the Indie SDK. If you're interested in getting involved on that front, we can certainly help guide that effort. But we currently really only have scheduled the shared library work for these updates. Let's see, I've included some links here. I'll make sure a link to this presentation is available. I've also got more content after what I planned to present today, if you'd like to dig in a little bit more on your own time. And yeah, I think that about covers what we're able to cover for today. If you'd like to learn more, we are holding that meetup at Indicio to dive in a little bit further into the nuts and bolts and what we see as the implications of this work. So really interested to get your input and feedback and participation in that meetup. But aside from that, I think I'll leave it there and see if anybody has any questions for the last few minutes.
Thank you for that presentation, Daniel and Stephen. That was a great overview. What would you say are the implications of this project for scalability and interoperability of indie networks?
Incredibly important. It's scalability, and I think as well governance. I think that's the important thing: is issuers, different categories of issuers will want different guarantees, if you will, from their layer one utility, as it's called in Trust Over IP, for where they put their information. And this allows them a whole lot more control to be able to do that. And that's really important. you know, from a scale perspective, it allows us to easily use, you know, spin up networks or use networks and not force the holder or the verifier to have to preload everything. So that gives us scale, it gives us more capacity on the networks. And then, as I say, this governance factor as well, all important.
Yeah, I'd second what Steven said there. The interesting thing to me as well with the Data Indie work is that, kind of paradoxically, by improving the Indie networks, we've almost in a sense made it easier not to use Indie networks and still maintain the same privacy preserving nature of an on-creds. It's in the future, it'll be a bit before we're really at that reality. But at the same time, by making an on-creds more interoperable, by making it more accessible, we're also strengthening the case for Indie networks themselves as a really good solution for your jurisdiction, your private network that meets your governance use cases and needs. So that's part of what gets me really excited about the IndieDid method.
Yeah, it's definitely a significant update. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to second that, what Daniel said, and highlight that pathing that was mentioned about how you reference other objects. Daniel put it well in the presentation, and people should highlight that's really important. Now we have a way to reference these objects that are indie specific right now, but could be put on other networks, and that work was pretty crucial. And as he mentioned, Marcus's blessing of it, if you will.
For sure.
Great. Are there any other questions for Daniel and Steven before we wrap it up? All right. I will make sure that the link to these slides goes into the meeting page. Looks like we are at the top of the hour. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining. Thanks to everybody who jumped in to give updates from working groups. And thanks again to Daniel and Steven for their presentation.
Thanks, Char.
Thank you.